This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. You made it to Friday. It's October 12th, 2018. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. It is a chilly Friday, 41 degrees right now at O'Hare, 42 at the lakefront. A high today, just 44 degrees.
And the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. The Dow doing a bit of a bungee jumping act over the last 20 minutes or so. Up big, then down, now back up into triple-digit gains. Let's get the latest from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
It has been remarkable to watch, Rob. As you mentioned, right now, the Dow up 126 points, or about 0.5%. We saw a big move higher right at the open. The Dow was just shy of 25,500, so that shows you the point spread that we're talking about. The NASDAQ composite is higher by almost 1.5%, or 102 points, and the S&P is up 20. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index has gone from small gains to small losses. The president has made clear he hates them, and if you have a mortgage, you might hate them too. But giant bank Citigroup loves rising interest rates. The client activity around the Fed's most recent rate hike in September helped Citi post a surprising 9% jump in revenue from fixed income trading in the third quarter. That marks the first increase since the start of last year, and it offset weaker results from its consumer banking unit. And Citi has been positive all day. It still is, and it's helping to boost financials. Confidence in the U.S. economy could be stumbling. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index declined this month. Americans are taking a dimmer view of personal finances and the long-term economic outlook. Even so, the Michigan index continues to stay at levels that reflect a strong economy and a tight labor market. Crude futures, same kind of move that we saw with stocks, with much higher earlier, now little changed at $71.05 a barrel. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, as you reported, the big banks are reporting higher profits, e-cigarettes under fire by the government, and an entrepreneur who uses local farmers to help produce his meals.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Food and Drug Administration threatens to pull new products made by more than 20 e-cigarette companies. We're going to cover that in our next segment right now. Earnings reports are out from America's big banks. We're joined by Jeff Hart, who is principal at Sandler O'Neill and Partners here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Jeff. What are we seeing in those earnings reports?
Yeah, good afternoon. I actually think some of the earnings reports we got were pretty solid, especially for Citigroup and J.P. Morgan. The whole kind of bank sector seemed to roll over and start underperforming kind of during some of the conference calls. And I think it was probably partially driven by some, I think, more conservative commentary and kind of deposit pricing and loan pricing and competition that came out of the PNC call. But I mean, as we sit here and look at banks today, these are good, solid, fundamental results. I think what investors are wrestling with is a little more of what can they do for an encore to kind of spur additional earnings growth next year, because things are pretty good in bank land fundamentally right now.
And how does this relate to the economy in general?
Well, I mean, the banks are kind of a proxy for the economy because they pretty much fund economic growth. So typically when the economy is strong, you see the banks doing well. We haven't seen it as much recently, and I think there's just a lot of kind of macro noise and confusion and just kind of issues kind of clouding the outlook a bit. But as long as we stay with pretty strong economic growth, which seems to be the case, I mean, that should be a more favorable environment for banks.
Now, did these projections or did the earnings reports that came out, did these meet analysts' projections? I mean, it seems like in this environment where interest rates are rising, the economy is doing really well, people have a lot of money to spend, and they have a desire to take out loans. If you weren't doing well as a bank in this environment, you wouldn't be doing a very good job as a banker.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good things going on for banks right now as far as earnings go. And I would kind of classify the results today as in line. I mean, there's always some moving parts, but I wasn't really excited about any of them or necessarily really disappointed by any of them. It was kind of in line with the expectations. And really, yeah, because, I mean, the credit environment's really good. The interest rate environment's getting better. I mean, there's a lot of things to like there for banks right now.
Well, we've heard some people who are kind of nervous about the rate right now, interest rates.
Yeah, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, and it's like if longer rates aren't going up, people are concerned it means that GDP growth is going to slow down. But then when longer rates start going up, people become concerned that that's going to cause the next recession. I think the reality is somewhere in the middle there. From my perspective, I mean, both short-term rates going up from the Fed, but also seeing kind of the longer end go up makes sense kind of where we're at economically in the cycle right now. And in both cases should be a good thing for bank earnings. It does always give you something to worry about, you know, is there going to be a potential negative someday? But as I look out to 2019, and I think the higher rates are a good thing, not a bad thing for the banks.
What's your read on the last 3 days in the stock market? You know, deep losses on Wednesday and Thursday, a little bit of a bounce back today, but the Dow did dip into negative territory just a couple of minutes before noon. Is this a blip or is this the beginning of a long-term trend?
Well, I don't think it's the beginning of a long-term trend. Not to say that there couldn't be more downside kind of correction-wise, you know, just because especially the U.S. stocks have had a pretty good run here. But when I kind of start thinking about what could be a downtrend, I kind of look at, okay, what are the fundamental kind of macro drivers and which ones have the potential to really fall into bed on us. And I don't really see a lot of problems on the horizon so far. So I think we're kind of looking at some profit taking after what has been a really good run in the market. And there are some things to be concerned about, be they trade wars, you know, things like that. There certainly are some macro concerns out there, but I'd be looking at kind of any declines we get here as opportunities to get back in, because to the extent GDP stays strong in the next year, which it seems like it will, that should be a good environment for stocks.
And do you have something that you would recommend, maybe not stocks by name, but areas in the market that you would recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in covering the large cap banks as I do. I like a name like Citigroup, where you kind of have, I think, some underappreciated expense opportunities as well as some better growth expectation possibilities than people are expecting. And also a name like Goldman Sachs, which has really been out of favor. But, I mean, we're still seeing a lot of good things in the investment banking space and market, and that should play well for Goldman Sachs.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. Jeff Hart, principal at Sandler O'Neill and Partners, based in Chicago. Coming up, the government ponders action against e-cigarette companies.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Government regulators are investigating whether e-cigarette companies have illegally introduced new devices and nicotine liquids to the market. Let's get the latest from Anna Edney, who is a health policy reporter at Bloomberg News based in Washington. Anna, specifically, you know, what are some of the ways the e-cigarette makers, that the FDA says that they tried to make it, you know, an end run around their authority?
Well, the what they're doing is they have possibly introduced new flavors of their e-cigarettes or other kinds of slight tweaks to the devices. So they might have different features or things like that, that the FDA says would basically disqualify them from being able to continue marketing those products, because that's technically a new product that was introduced after this August 2016 cutoff date that the FDA had imposed.
And what are some of the flavors that have been introduced that could potentially be illegal?
One of the interesting ones that was pointed out to me was this company called Juul that is really popular among teens who have been using e-cigarettes. And the Juul didn't actually receive a letter from the Food and Drug Administration warning them about this today, because the FDA has already done a surprise inspection at their headquarters in San Francisco, where they were looking for some of this information. So they might already have what they need on Juul. But two of their flavors mango and cool cucumber, which are, again, really popular with the kids. Those are two that have been, there have been complaints coming from tobacco, anti-tobacco groups, as well as some health groups like the American Cancer Society, that those have been on the market only since 2017. So those wouldn't qualify for being allowed to be sold right now.
Besides Juul, the FDA sent letters to 21 e-cigarette manufacturers. Is this business going to make it?
I think that is a lot of people in the industry are holding their breath on that right now. The FDA has become coming out more and more against the industry because of the way that the underage use has been able to continue and to grow. And so if the industry, the FDA recently asked five of the biggest makers of these e-cigarettes to come out and find, you know, give them plans, tell them how they're going to decrease youth use of these products. And if they don't do that, they said they could think the FDA might, you know, be able to think about banning flavored products because those are really what attract the kids to e-cigarettes, and possibly looking at banning online sales. So they're, you know, they have a lot of possible regulation that could be pretty rough on the industry if they don't get their act together.
Well, thank you very much for the insights. Anna Edney, health policy reporter, Bloomberg News, based in Washington. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, the founder of a suburban meal delivery service that's growing despite lots of competition.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets with Elisa Parenti.
Well, Chris, we are higher, not the gains we saw earlier, but the Dow is up 169 points and moving above 25,200. NASDAQ up 1.5% or 108 points, and the S&P is gaining 22. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is right now literally unchanged. We've gone from small losses to small gains. Crude oil futures slightly higher at $71.09. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Higher grain prices across the board. We have December corn up 4.25 at 373.5. March up 4 at 385.25. November beans up 8.75, 867. The July's up 8 at 918.25. And December wheat up 10.5 at 518.5. Higher prices across the board to finish out the week. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are up, but off of earlier highs. We'll see what's moving Wall Street and later have a conversation with a noted market contrarian.
Entrepreneur Friday, a local company finding success in the very crowded space of meal delivery.
A priest from Chicago's North Side is charged with sexually abusing two women and attacking a teenage girl.
Emergency agencies in Florida say they've done an initial search of 80% of the area affected by Hurricane Michael and have found no sign of widespread death.
WBBM Business, the Dow is up 76 points, actually now up 73. The NASDAQ is up 88 and the S&P 500 is up 13.
Cold fronts moving into the Chicago area, a high today of 44, overnight low in the 20s. Right now, 41 degrees at O'Hare.
The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are looking to end the week on a winning note. We're joined by Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, welcome back to the program. What's your read on the last 3 days of market activity? Two steep drops Wednesday and Thursday, and then a little bit of a recovery today. What's going on?
Well, good afternoon, Rob and Chris, and thanks for having me on. You know, the story is just volatility. Volatility is definitely back in the markets, and we've seen, as you said, we've seen two big down days and now a little bit of an attempt at a recovery. We'll see if it really holds because it does look pretty tenuous at this point. What's happening is bond yields have risen above 3%, and that number has kind of gotten the markets a little bit spooked. And when the markets look at bond yields up, and then the Chinese tariffs maybe getting worse instead of better, there's a lot of insecurity in the markets right now, and everybody has kind of been looking for a reason to sell off, and I think we finally found a reason.
Now, this is the most volatile period for the market since February. There was a recovery there and then substantial gains after that. Can we expect the same pattern this time?
Well, I've said this, and I've said this on my Twitter feed for those of the audience that follow me. I don't believe this sell-off is as viable as past sell-offs have been, because the reasons behind it, I think, are going to hold. So you have bond yields above 3%. I don't think they're going to go back down, and I think that this trade situation in China, people need to really keep an eye on. Now, it's important to note that President Trump, when he was dealing with NAFTA, he didn't like NAFTA. He spoke out about it, and he said a lot of negative things, and the markets got spooked a little bit, and then all of a sudden Canada and Mexico and the U.S. came up with an agreement that I think was better for the United States, to the USMCA agreement. And so in that case, his banter was just a negotiation tool. The problem here with China is that China may not blink. President Trump is using the same tactic and a hardline stance, and it may be a good negotiating tool, but in this case, China is a little bit stronger in the relationship than Canada and Mexico, where they need us more. And the question is, does China blink? Because if China doesn't and the U.S. doesn't, then we're going to have a trade war that lasts for a long time, and no one wins in a trade war.
Michael, is there a calculated risk here and for investors?
Well, normally the safe haven is bonds, but because bonds have actually been selling off a little bit because of higher inflation numbers, I always advocate just being as diversified as possible, because you want to be long the stock market, but you know, you have pullbacks like this, you want to have a little bit of cash on the sidelines, because these pullbacks are opportunities. I don't think that the market has done going down yet. I really don't. I think that investors could sit tight here and wait a little bit longer, because I think there's more to play out here. But eventually, in the next month or two, there's going to be a good buying opportunity. And so you always want to have some cash on the sidelines to make sure that you are you're able to take advantage of these situations.
In what areas do you see opportunities?
I think tech is still a great area. Tech has gotten beaten up over the last month, mainly because people were looking for winners to sell. And the biggest winners have been technology stocks. So you see Amazon and Google and these great names that have huge moats, huge competitive advantages. They're trading 10, 15% off their highs. And I think those are the best stocks to buy once this time is over. And I think that you can even start nibbling now at some of these stocks. You see tech outperforming today. And I think that, in general, technology will be the better bet going forward.
And in the tech realm, are we talking about the FANG stocks? Because, you know, Facebook is taking its share of lumps over the last couple of months, or is it elsewhere in the tech sector?
Well, I think tech in general, you can buy ETFs just for tech software, XLV. You can buy the Qs, which is the NASDAQ overall. There's a lot of ways to play it. I think the FANG stocks are the best. They perform the best. They're the least risky. Even though Facebook has sold off, the rest of the tech sector, or well, the rest of FANG has done very well. And if you bought those four stocks, I think that they're going to be outperformers going into the future, and I think that's a good bet. You could also – there's other technology stocks that are great. The lower the capitalization of some of these tech stocks, the more risky they are. So if you go with the FANG stocks, I think you're taking less risk, and that's probably a better bet. Or if you really believe in technology, then you go into things like biotechs and things like that, where it's riskier, but the reward may be better.
Well, thank you, as always, for the insights. Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund and author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. You can follow him on Twitter. Coming up next, an Entrepreneur Friday, a suburban businessman having success in the tough meal delivery space by stressing local and organic foods.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we are finding out how to stand out in the very competitive area of home meal delivery. We welcome Tom Levitt, who's founder and executive chef at White Oak Gourmet in Long Grove, Illinois. Welcome to our program, Tom. When did you get started with your gourmet?
We started White Oak Gourmet back in 2004, and we converted to a delivery-based business in 2013. Hi, Chris.
Hi. We want to know, how did you get the idea? It's such a popular idea now. There's so much competition. How do you get there?
The way we got there was, as a chef, I was doing in-home meals for customers, and my client list got so big I couldn't handle them all, so I converted to a delivery-based business, and the customers loved it, the convenience of just getting the food delivered right to them rather than me actually cooking in their kitchens.
Now, has this always been, can you really call it farm to table? It's farm to you to table eventually, but did you always locally source your ingredients from nearby farms?
Starting back in 2010, I made a decision to really source locally and started building contacts. Back then, it was really difficult, and I had to go chase down the farmers and get the produce and the items from them. Now, I luckily get them to deliver to my kitchen here in Long Grove.
What is the difference? I mean, for example, you said you converted to locally sourced food 8 years ago, which means you were getting it from, commercial providers for the 6 years before that. What's the difference from a customer standpoint, locally sourced food versus something that comes from a big commercial warehouse?
Well, there's so many questions about where your food comes from these days, and customers really want to know. And if they trust you as being a provider of food that comes from a resource that you know personally, then you've got a leg up on other people with that.
I see that your menu rotates weekly. What are some of the things on the menu right today?
We do lemongrass chicken is a very popular item that we rotate on there. We also have items that we found that customers like every week. We use a beef from Wisconsin, Strauss Farms, and we make a pot roast that we just absolutely cannot take off the menu.
How much does it cost?
We have a weekly meal plan that there's no subscription required. It starts at $72 for four meals for four dinners plus a salad.
And then what's your vetting process for all of your suppliers? How did you come to find Frillman Farms in Prairie View or Spence Farm in Fairbury or Blackwing Organic Meats in Antioch? How did you come across these businesses and develop these relationships?
Actually, Frillman Farms is right down the street. I could throw a rock and hit his farm, basically.
Well, don't do that. You want to keep working together.
I pay a visit to the farm and develop a relationship with them.
So just that simple. You go to the farm, you check out some of their items, and then you get into business together.
That's correct. Yes, it's really important for us to support these farmers. The season is so short. I take as much as I can from them during the local growing season.
This business you're in is very competitive. Is there enough business for you and all of your competitors?
Yes, it's a pretty wide open space. I think a lot of people compare us to like the packaged prepared meal services that you can get, but you still have to do some of the cooking with that. Our meals come to the customers fully prepared. They just have to heat and eat.
Nice to meet you today, Tom. Thanks for joining us. Tom Levitt is founder and executive chef at White Oak Gourmet in Long Grove. The company website is whiteoakgourmet.com. Now, still to come, using investor pessimism to time the market.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's thought from some market contrarians that Wall Street has not become pessimistic enough for them to start buying. Let's get the view of Mark Hulbert, who's an investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Contrarians are waiting for deeper pessimism and despair. Is this financial analysis or a Marvel supervillain?
Actually, it's a little bit of both. It turns out that even though it looks awfully counterintuitive that the market would act this way, there's a lot of good research and evidence, both from just economic statistics as well as psychology, that it applies. And we saw it this morning at the opening. We had the terrible down days on Wednesday and Thursday of this week, but people were still eager to jump in and say, aha, the worst is over, now happy days are here again. Market was up quite a few points right at the open, and then it's given it up, all of that, and then it's down 150 points or so. Now, according to contrarian analysis, what you're looking for that will tell us when the end of the correction has happened is that when the greed has given away to fear. They look at the world in terms of a spectrum between greed and fear. When greed is predominant, then you start seeing a market sell off. You'll continue to sell off until that greed gives away to fear. And I don't think we saw it as of this morning, and that's why the market is down. And I think we still don't see it, but it could happen as soon as, Monday or next week or a little bit longer, depending on how long it takes for some of these eager beavers to say, you know what, I'm now really scared.
And we haven't, the last time we experienced something like this was in February. Is the correction coming at just the right time, or is it a little bit overdue?
Well, again, there are a million different theories for that one. I think it is overdue, and I'd say one of the explanations for why is that you had a huge amount of enthusiasm on Wall Street, and the principle of the markets, and again, it seems counterintuitive, but it's backed by some good research, is that the market does not accommodate the majority. It instead frustrates the majority, and the majority was very excited and enthusiastic about the market in late September, early October, when the market hit its all-time highs. And sure enough, in the wake of that enthusiasm, the market says, hey, you're getting a little too ahead of yourself. I'm going to pull back.
What does it say about people who think they know the market?
Well, that's always a good question. And indeed, everyone, including myself, of course, needs a lot of humility on this. Anyone who claims they know which way the market's going is fooling themselves, or if not themselves, the people that are listening to them. So humility is always the first step towards virtue in the stock market. But insofar as there is any regularity out there, it seems to be contrary to what most people think the market's going to do. So in other words, if you find yourself in the majority, then that's when you start having to say, hey, maybe I better give it a second thought.
So you had the two deep declines yesterday, but now the Dow is up 108 points, 109 now. Does that work within your greed versus fear theory?
Well, it does. And really, the way to use the theory is to look to see what people's reaction is. We carefully track the sentiment among hundreds of advisors every day. And we look to see whether they take the occasion of a recovery, in this case, to say, okay, now is a good opportunity for us to lighten up on stocks. That would be coming from the fear end of the spectrum, because they think the market's going to continue to go down and the market's slight increase today gives them an opportunity to do so. Or do they operate from the greed point of view and say, it's time for us to load up on stocks because that was the extent of the decline and now happy days are here again. All a contrarian needs to do is simply look at the reaction of the majority of advisors and say, if they're reacting from the point of view of greed, that's a bad sign. If they're reacting from the point of view of fear, then that suggests that maybe much of the damage has already been done.
Good to talk with you, Mark. You really cover it all. Mark Hulbert is investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. WBBM Business is sponsored by Baird. And from Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Well, we are headed higher. The Dow up 133 points, or 0.5%, to 25,187. The NASDAQ gaining almost 1.5%, or 105 points, to 7,334. And the S&P up 20 to 2,748. That's a gain of 0.75%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is fractionally higher. Big bank stocks are among those pulling back from healthy gains. Investors are welcoming news of lower credit costs and positive trends in their mortgage business. They're still worried, though, about future growth. J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon says there are, quote, increasing economic and geopolitical uncertainties that may have negative effects on the economy. In the gaming world, it's a flurry of relief for Activision Blizzard after the company launched its Call of Duty game. It's called Black Ops 4. Analysts think this version of the franchise could be a Fortnite killer. Close to 300,000 viewers have tuned in on Twitch to watch the play on the debut. That was more than three times of the draw for Fortnite. Crude oil futures are slightly higher to $71.22 a barrel, with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.